I'd just like to recognize that this study was funded by the National Institute of Health and the UIC Center for Reducing Risks in Vulnerable Populations. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. By way of background, between 2000 and 2005, 8 million new legal immigrants settled in the United States. And as we know, immigrants comprise about 12% of the U.S. population. We're finding that neighborhoods in which immigrants live provide the context for the way that they adjust to a new country. And recent studies have suggested that neighborhood level factors affect health and adaptation. Historically, immigrants first settled in poor urban ethnic enclaves and only later moved to higher income non-immigrant neighborhoods. Recently, trends are showing that immigrants are beginning to settle directly into either diverse immigrant neighborhoods or non-immigrant neighborhoods. And this is particularly true for groups who do not have the numbers of co-ethnics to form homogeneous enclaves. Neighborhood context is particularly important for the elderly who are left less mobile and have fewer opportunities to participate and have contact with mainstream environments. Most studies, however, have been looking at physical characteristics or the built environment or neighborhood characteristics such as crime and other factors. But we are considering that ethnic composition may also affect immigrants' trajectories for acculturation and adaptation. Understanding how neighborhood context affects health may facilitate interventions targeting individuals as well as communities at risk. In terms of mental health, midlife and older immigrants acculturate more slowly than young people. They have slower language acquisition, but they also tend to have limited direct contact with outside, with the mainstream culture. And during the initial post-immigration period, therefore, the family is central to due to social isolation, and the spouse for older people may comprise the primary social context. Often, however, children or grandchildren provide some indirect connection. We also find gender differences in acculturation and adaptation. Women tend to rely on social support and other relational characteristics, while men seem to be most influenced by work-related variables. All of these lead in many cases to what we are calling cultural alienation, feelings of estrangement and detachment from prevailing social norms. And in our previous studies, we found that cultural alienation may be a modifiable precursor to depression in older adult immigrants. I'm going to report on studies that we've done with immigrants from the former Soviet Union. They comprise the leading, during the 90s, the leading ethnicity for refugee status in the U.S. They comprise the fourth largest group in Chicago with English as a second language, and also comprise what could be called an invisible minority, because they don't look particularly different, but their language is certainly different, their cultural background is different, and their relationships to the community are certainly different. Let's see, I missed one of my... Immigration from the former Soviet Union to the U.S. peaked shortly after the fall of the Soviet Union, between 1991 and 93, when the number reached about 60,000 in 1 year. More than half of the immigrants at about that time were over 50, and this group is now reaching older ages where they have greater health care needs. There's a larger proportion of female than male former Soviet immigrants, and in general they settle in large metropolitan areas of the U.S. They tended to enter the U.S. with their families or for family reunification, and in general are older than many other immigrant groups. They find themselves having to be caregivers for their older family members at the same time that they're aging in an unfamiliar country. There's a high rate of depressed mood and a sense of alienation due to, in part, to slower acculturation. So the purpose of this analysis is to examine acculturation, neighborhood social context, and alienation for immigrant married couples from the former Soviet Union. The sample included women who had completed all four rounds of data collection in the Chicago Health After Immigration Project, which we called CHAI, a longitudinal study of acculturation, family adaptation, and health behavior in immigrants from the former Soviet Union. We began with women, and 2 years into the study, the men, their husbands, were clamoring to be part as well, and so we included their husbands. These are the eligibility criteria for the original study. The women had to be aged 40 to 74, had immigrated directly from the former Soviet Union, were married with at least one child living in the U.S. because we did have a family component to the study, and were able to, were fluent in Russian with no psychiatric history. It was a volunteer study, and they were recruited directly from the community using flyers, radio announcements in Russian language, and network sampling, and we had bilingual Russian, English speaking graduate assistants and others, community volunteers, community research assistants to collect the data. For this follow-up study, we mailed questionnaires to 230 former CHAI participants. We mailed the husbands and wives questionnaires 1 year apart so that they wouldn't influence each other in giving their information. 188, or 80% of the total sample, returned their completed questionnaires, and they reflected 96 couples. We used geocoding to map the addresses of the participants to their census tracts and their block groups. The participants lived in 77 different census tracts, mostly in the northern and northern suburbs of the Chicago metropolitan area. Block groups are smaller geographic areas than census tracts and usually represent about 1,500 people. Because it's a smaller area, in this study we used block groups as indicators of neighborhood. The mean age for this sample at the point of time that we collected the questionnaires for women was about 63 years old and for men 68 years old. They had lived in the United States, women for approximately 8.5 years and men approximately 10 years. It's really very close because most of the husbands and wives came together, but there were a few exceptions. The measures that we are including in this analysis are an alienation scale developed by Nicasio, the five subscales from the language identity and behavior acculturation scale, including English language, American and Russian identity, American and Russian behavior. As an indicator of neighborhood, again, we used block groups, and we looked at percent non-citizens as an indicator of new immigrants, because immigrants are eligible for citizenship after 5 years, and so we estimated that most of the non-citizens would have been in the U.S. for fewer than that time. We also used two other self-report measures, the sense of community index and the social support index. Across the block groups, if you look at the non-citizen information, the percent of Russian speakers, the percent of non-citizens ranged from about 2.83 to 44% of the neighborhoods. On a scale of 1 to 4, alienation averaged slightly higher than the midpoint. American behavior was relatively low. Russian behavior was relatively high. Actually, the sense of community was somewhat higher than the midpoint of 3, and social support was somewhat higher than the midpoint of 2. For women, alienation was significantly negatively correlated with American behavior, sense of community, and social support, and was positively correlated with Russian behavior. The percent non-citizen in the neighborhood was negatively associated with American behavior and sense of community. For men, we found similar relationships, except that percent non-citizens was not correlated with any of the self-report measures. Paired comparison tests showed that men and women differed only on American behavior, with women demonstrating or reporting higher American behavior than men. We did a regression analysis, and when alienation was regressed on acculturation, social support, sense of community, and diversity or percent non-citizens, the significant contributors were higher Russian behavior, lower American behavior, lower sense of community, and lower social support for women, and this explained approximately 39% of the variance in alienation. For men, the findings were similar, except that a positive contributor for men was lower percent non-citizens. And in this model, 38% of the variance in alienation was explained. In general, we found that participants live in neighborhoods with widely varying immigrant concentration, ranging from almost none others, to close to half non-citizens. This may be a reflection of the fact that they belong to a relatively small ethnic group that does not tend to form enclaves and therefore does not have a predominant pattern of resettlement. For them, the residential choices varied depending on their own particular circumstances. After almost a decade post-immigration, the participants continued to report their lifestyle behavior as being predominantly more Russian than American. And this suggests, again, that acculturation is slower in older adults than in younger. For both men and women, cultural alienation is affected by acculturation as well as community characteristics. As men and women became more acculturated to American lifestyle, they seem to feel less isolated and more connected to the mainstream culture. This finding suggests that even a small amount of involvement in their new culture may alleviate some of the feelings of estrangement and may promote mental health. The lack of sense of community is an important predictor for cultural alienation for both men and women. This suggests that although their residential choices varied and may be dictated by individual circumstances, they do have the sense of community and the place that people settle have an important important implications for successful adjustment. Social support seemed to buffer alienation for women. Quality relationships and social life may be more important for women than for men. And also the measure that we use, the self-report measure that we use, looked at not only local family and friends, but also extended family and long-distance friends. And perhaps feeling good about their relationship with their families and friends were particularly important for women. Also, women may be better at maintaining long-distance relationships, and these relationships may be may support their feelings of comfort and decrease their sense of alienation. For men, however, living in communities with other recent immigrants seem to buffer alienation, and perhaps for men, the more immediate aspects of their physical and social environments were more important. They may feel less estranged even if they're surrounded by other non-immigrants who were not of their same ethnic background. It may be that the others, because they were also immigrants, they could identify that they were dealing with similar issues, and perhaps seeing other people who were struggling with English made them feel less unusual or less estranged from their communities. So, in conclusion, understanding the complexity of individual and contextual influences on immigrant adaptation is important for developing community-based interventions for individuals, as well as looking at neighborhood-level programs to reduce alienation and enhance mental health for immigrants. Reducing alienation for older adults may be supported by facilitating exposure to the mainstream as well as to other immigrant groups, at the same time supporting biculturalism. Thank you.
Well, maybe don't go too far. Are there any questions? Yes.
We didn't. Many immigrants from the former Soviet Union, most of our sample, probably 80%, were Jewish and came from Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. And so they had been pretty much cut off from religious activities in the former Soviet Union and didn't tend to participate. And their there's very little grassroots development of social connections because they just didn't have that kind of experience in the former Soviet Union. So, no, they didn't have formal connections.
Are there any questions for any of the other speakers that we still have?
No.
Because I had done one form when I was in school. I translated to Spanish, and it took me forever because I kept being told that I wasn't asking the question that I wanted the answer to. Was that very difficult, getting both sides to agree?
People within the research team did the team had bilingual speakers. So the lead graduate research assistant did the Spanish to English, and then we sent it to our Mexican partners for the back translation, and then they did some of the key, the initial translation sent us for the confirmation.
Yes. Part of finding the way fast with our survey, we found that we had to fine-tune the survey for Puerto Rican Spanish because originally we were expecting more of a Mexican population. Mm-hmm. And I'm Peruvian, so I speak Peruvian Spanish. And I think what you said is we were trying to find something out by asking something a little different.
So each dialect, you really have to be very careful.
Just enough so that you can be asking something completely different.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I really appreciate it. The speakers were great. Thanks a lot.